during this meditation, I went through the steps of the breath meditation. This is our practice, practice that the Buddha passed down to us, practice that was the Buddha's primary practice, Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. Practice that he said that if we follow diligently according to his instructions will lead us to a greater happiness, to awakening in this life. So we make this effort to be mindful of the breath, and as we talked about last week, we hit obstacles. The Buddha identified the specific obstacles to concentration as the hindrances, and he identified 5 hindrances that we should be on the lookout for and that we should bring awareness to when they throw up obstacles to our meditation. It's particularly important, as he said in his teaching, to be mindful of the 2 hindrances of dullness and restlessness, the mind that's overactive. And he gave specific teachings on being mindful of those 2 hindrances. Those 2 hindrances are particularly important to look out for because we go into those states of dullness and restlessness when we want to avoid the present moment. We might go into the hindrance of desire when we're meditating in the morning. We might go into the hindrance of desire by thinking about what we're going to have for breakfast, thinking about those delicious hard-boiled eggs that you have in the fridge. The reason generally why you go into that hindrance is because you're hungry and because you have some delicious hard-boiled eggs in the fridge. The reason why we go into the hindrances of dullness and restlessness is because we want to avoid the present moment. So sometimes there's this notion that, well, I'm going into dullness because I'm tired, I didn't get enough sleep. That might have something to do with it, but largely, the mind knows where you're a little vulnerable, so it sees that you're a little, maybe not quite as energetic as you'd like to be, so it lures you into a state of dullness, but it does that in the service of taking you out of the present moment. That's the reason, that's the cause for the hindrance of dullness and the hindrance of restlessness. We might think, well, I've got a lot on my plate, that's why I'm thinking a lot. Well, the mind knows that you've got a little excess energy because you've got a lot on your plate, so it lures you into those thoughts about this, that, and the other thing. But those states of dullness and restlessness are states that are rooted in delusion. We go into those states in the service of deluding ourselves, putting ourselves in a deluded state so that we can avoid being present. So we might ask the question, well, why do we want to avoid being present? Well, we want to avoid being present, I'll use the term in large part because, we don't want to oversimplify things, but the truth is, in large part, we go into those deluded states because our present moment experience is disagreeable. We don't want to be present because our present moment experience is disagreeable to us. It may be painful, and we may dislike it. There's aversion on some level to our present moment experience, so we seek to avoid the present moment. What do we mean by present moment experience? Our present moment experience is our experience of the senses. Largely in the meditation, it's the experience of the body, right? It's the experience of the body. Our present moment experience is the experience of the body. And in the meditation, our present moment experience may be disagreeable. It's often disagreeable. Elements of our present moment experience are disagreeable, and we want to remove ourselves from the present moment because we dislike the disagreeable experiences of the body. So there may be physical experience in the body that's disagreeable, physical sensations. So So in this meditation, we all probably had some physical experiences that were disagreeable, maybe even some painful experiences. Everybody has, by nature of having a body, the potential for disagreeable, unpleasant, and oftentimes painful bodily experience. That's just the nature of having a human body. It doesn't feel good all the time. We notice this particularly as we go through aging. Anybody experiencing aging here? As you go through the process of aging, the body, as we go through the process of sickness, aging, and dying, the body is breaking down, right? And that's disagreeable and painful on a physical level, right? So there's a lot more things that hurt now than when I was 40 years younger. Not even to say 50 years younger. There's a lot more things that are painful in the body, that are disagreeable in the body. So there's physical experience of the body that's unpleasant or disagreeable, and then there's the mental and emotional experience of the body that we experience as form on a physical level. And this more often than not is more problematic than even the physical experience of the body. So the little bit of soreness in the knee that's a part of the process of aging might be a little bit disagreeable to us, but the worry and anxiety and aversion toward aging that we feel in the body as form is actually probably more problematic for us in terms of disagreeable experience. So the mental, emotional, psychological manifestations, physical manifestation in the body is something that we all are carrying with us, and it's disagreeable. The body is this kind of storehouse of emotional pain that hasn't been processed, or trauma, if it's large trauma, or all the different subtle traumas, that we've been holding in our bodies. That we experience on a physical level, that physical experience of anxiety and worry and stress and dissatisfaction and despair and unhappiness, and I could just go on for the rest of the talk, manifests itself physically in the body. That physical experience in the body has an unpleasant feeling tone. And of course, the unpleasant physical experience in the body, the unpleasant mental and emotional experience in the body, the feeling tone, carries with it a karmic history that is quite painful for us, right? We may feel a certain anxiety in the body that has a physical tone that's unpleasant, and that physical tone leads us to the perception of the experience of anxiety that we've known throughout our lives, right? So it's compounded. It's compounded. So those feelings, or those emotional feelings that we have in the body, are quite painful for us. So, this is all stuff that we know, right? The question is, what are we doing about it? So there's this experience of the body that's painful, physically painful in terms of different sensations, in terms of the physiology of the body, and then there's this physical this mental and emotional, psychological pain that we feel in the body that has a karmic history and you know, and a painfulness that is an expression of you know, a lifetime of mental, emotional, psychological pain. So no wonder why we don't want to be in the body, right? So no wonder why we want to be in the body. We want to be away from this experience of body that's disagreeable and painful and kicks up all this pain for us. So in our practice, we have to see the hindrances, as we talked about last week, bring awareness to the hindrance. Oh, there's restlessness, there's dullness. You know, bring awareness to it, we create a little bit of space, and that's the Buddha's basic instruction. Create a little bit of space, don't feed the hindrance. You don't have to get rid of it, but don't feed it, starve it. That's pretty much verbatim what the way he explains it. When there's a little bit of space, of course, there's an opportunity for awareness, for understanding, for discernment, and the heart begins to understand what I've just said. You know, what I've just said, because, you know, it's very hard to understand these things intellectually, but the heart understands that, you know, we're avoiding being present, and, you know, because of that, we're not going to be able to develop concentration and the wisdom that we're going to need to be able to find freedom from the ways that we're clinging to all those different emotional experiences that have been compounded and plaguing us throughout our lives. So again, you know, simple awareness, right? Just bring awareness to the hindrance. And then of course, you know, applying an antidote to those hindrances is extremely useful for dullness, opening the eyes slightly, for restlessness, using some mental noting. So we go into these hindrances of dullness and restlessness because we want to avoid being present. We're trying to avoid the experience of the body that's disagreeable to us, that we dislike. We're trying to get away from that experience. We go into these hindrances. If we were off the cushion, we could go to the fridge, right? Or turn on the cell phone, right? Or the TV. But ostensibly in the meditation, we're not supposed to be doing that. You could turn off your camera. If the main and go to the fridge, but since we're not doing that, we go into dullness or restlessness. So in the meditation, we see that we're doing that. We get a little bit of space from the hindrance. We apply an antidote, and we try to focus the mind on one spot that feels good. We focus the mind on one spot that feels good. So this whole body may be fraught with physical, emotional, psychological, existential pain, but the whole body isn't. The whole body isn't. And if we look carefully, we see, well, there's some places that aren't so painful. There's a few places, perhaps, or maybe one, just a couple of places that feel okay, and I can put my mind there. So, you know, those are the places that we want to focus on. So we pick one place. We usually pick one place where we can feel the breath, where the breath feels comfortable. That's why it's so important to choose a place to feel the breath where the breath feels comfortable, or at least neutral, where there isn't unpleasant sensation. You know, so, you know, if you can't find a place in terms of the nostrils or the belly or the chest or the throat, try to find some other place. Usually one of those places for most people most of the time is okay. You know, so we find one spot that feels good. We find one spot. Yeah, I know the rest of the body feels like crap. You know, there's all this emotional, physical pain in the body. We find one place that feels good. We find one place that feels good, and we stake our claim there. We put everything else to the side. This is the Buddha's instruction. Put all that other stuff that I just went through, all that stuff that I just went through, put it all to the side. This is the first level of concentration. Put it all to the side. Put it all to the side. and focus on the breath at one place that feels good. This is specifically his instruction. Be mindful of the breath in and of itself. In and of itself. Right? You know, Ajahn Lee, who are teaching specifically, comes from the Thai forest master. You know, many of you know the metaphors that he uses, in particular the metaphor of the mango. You know, if he said, if you have a mango, you know, cut away the bad spots and only eat what the good spots. He said our tendency is to cut away all the bad spots and eat those. You know, so you know, in the meditation, you know, there's a lot of bad spots, if you will, in the body. We're not engaging with those. We're finding one spot that feels good, and we're focusing our attention there. Eat the good parts of the mango. Find a good place to put the mind, a good home for the mind, and focus your attention there. Well, that could come under the category of easier said than done. You know, there's all this unpleasant experience in the body. The tendency of the mind is to want to go to that experience, right? How do we keep the mind? And that's partly just because of, that's the untrained mind. We've never trained the mind. Certainly never trained the mind to go to what feels good. You know, a lot of us, you know, just want to go to what's painful, you know? So a lot of that is just out of ignorance. Part of it is just because it's the untrained mind. So how do we keep the mind on that one spot? On that one spot. You know, we use what's known as directed thought, right? So the mind just isn't going to stay on that one spot. How is the mind going to stay on that one spot if it's never done that before? And if there's all this other stuff that's calling to our attention, all this pain. So, you know, we have to be very proactive in using directed thought. Stay with the breath. Mindful of the breath. We just keep reminding ourselves to stay with the breath. We're training the mind to stay on that one spot, and we're being very proactive in doing that. If we're not proactive in keeping the mind on the breath, the mind isn't going to stay there. You know, it's going to get pulled away. You know? So we're proactive and we're purposeful. So these are the two things that really drive mindfulness the way the Buddha taught it. And the two ways that really underpin how we practice directed thought, we're proactive, we're making a conscious effort using what's known as internal verbal fabrication, we're guiding ourselves, stay with the breath, stay with the breath. And we're being very purposeful. So we're in tune with our sense of purpose. We know that I'm doing this out of compassion for myself because there's suffering in my life and I want to come to the end of suffering. I'm doing this out of loving kindness for myself. I'm keeping my attention on this spot out of loving kindness for myself because I have a wish to be happy. And by keeping the mind on the breath, this little by slowly over time is going to lead me to a greater happiness in life. Yeah. So, you know, the heart understands that. More and more we begin to understand that. As we practice, we begin to understand that this is a path. You know, at the beginning it's hard because, you know, there's a gap between our connection to the heart and that understanding in the heart. The mind, there's doubt, right? Is this really going to work? Why should I keep the mind on the breath at one point? Then you have a lot of other people saying, oh, go to what's painful, you know, which Buddha never taught that, you know? But, you know, of course, there's a lot of people selling remedies off the back of trucks. You know, we have to be careful of those, those folks. So we keep the mind on the breath at the one point. We're very proactive and very purposeful. We're in tune with our intention. If you do that, if you're very proactive and you're very purposeful, you can keep the mind on the breath at that one point. You can do it. There's no question in my mind that you can do it. You know? The problem is that, you know, we tend not to follow those instructions, you know? But if you follow those instructions, there's no question that you can do it. So you're using the mind, you're using fabrication to focus your attention, right? On the breath. So, you know, I gave a whole talk on this last Monday night, so I'm not going to, a couple of you were there, I'm not going to over extrapolate on this in the surface of time, but when you're using the mind to focus your attention on the breath, when you're using fabrication, you know, you're using your human potential. You know, your human potential. You know, you've been given this human mind. Now use it. Put it to good use. Put it to good use. So we're putting it to good use by focusing our attention in a place that's good in the service of developing concentration so that we can develop discernment, so that we can find release from suffering. So we're using the mind to focus our attention on the breath, using directed thought and the other parts of the technique, which I'll go through briefly in a moment or two in terms of evaluation and spreading, which are processes in which we're using the mind. So we're using the mind to keep the attention on the breath instead of just sitting there and enduring our pain. It's like anybody can sit there and endure your pain. It's painful, but anybody can do that. Animals can do that. You know, you only need the animal brain to do that. You know, that was the talk I gave the other day. You only need the animal brain to sit there, you know, and focus on the knee that hurts and the emotional stuff and all that stuff. You know. In using the mind to focus our attention in a place that feels good, that's in our best interests, like the breath, we're transcending the animal brain. You know, the effort that we put into using the mind in the service of fabrication, in the service of directed thought, is an expression of your goodness as a human being. You know, this is why, you know, the effort that you make to train the mind and heart is the greatest expression of your goodness. You're using this human mind that you've been blessed with. If you just sit there and endure your pain, or let your mind go wherever it wants to go, you know, let it go to whatever it wants to go to, you're not using your human mind. You know, an animal can let its mind go wherever it wants to go to. You have this human mind. We're putting it to good use. We're putting it to good use, right? In the service of developing concentration, ease, tranquility, discernment, and finding freedom from our suffering so that we can, you know, make the most of our lives and make a difference in this world. So in step two of the meditation, we're cultivating an easeful breath, right? So we're using the mind to evaluate the breath to really make a good home for the mind, right? So in the first step, we really focus the mind on the breath. And the second step, we try to get that breath to feel really good. So, you know, this is essential to the process. Here we're shaping an experience of the breath that's pleasant. The Buddha realized to really get the mind to want to stay there on the breath and in the body, the experience of the breath and ultimately the body had to be pleasant. That was that's human nature, you know. That's the nature of, you know, the animal brain, is that it inclines towards pleasure. So we have to be able to incline the mind towards what's pleasurable. So as we cultivate an easeful breath, then the mind starts to incline to the breath and wants to stay on the breath and in the body and in the present moment. So first we're forcing the attention onto the breath, using directed thought, being very proactive. I mean, there's a quality of wholeheartedness that helps us transcend the forcing element, but forcing the attention onto the breath is only going to get us so far. We want to get to the point where the mind on its own begins to incline to the breath, and it will only begin to incline to the breath on its own to the extent that we need it to in order to develop the kind of concentration that we need if we learn to cultivate an easeful breath, a pleasurable breath. So in the second step, we're cultivating this pleasurable breath. Now, of course, what the Buddha knew, of course, was that the breath conditions the body. Neuroscience has shown us that the breath regulates the central nervous system. So as the breath becomes more easeful, it conditions ease throughout the body. So this body that was fraught with all this pain and all this emotional and psychological dissonance, we start to bring ease to it. we start to bring ease to it by cultivating an easeful breath. And then the third step, letting that easeful breath energy spread to the whole body. So in the third step, our objective is to pervade the body with ease and to have a pleasurable abiding. To have a pleasurable abiding. This is the first jhana, to have a pleasurable abiding. And again, this is all very doable in a daily life practice. You know, you've got to put the time into it, but if you follow these steps, you know, you can learn to keep the mind on the breath, cultivate an easeful breath, and learn in a period of meditation. Now, it usually takes me in any daily sitting a good half hour at least. If I meditate with a group, like doing it with you guys today or on our class on Monday night, it's a little bit easier because the mind is very bright. But usually in any sitting, I can cultivate that easeful and pleasurable abiding in the body. It's just practice. It takes practice, but you can develop this ability to have an easeful and pleasurable abiding in the body, in your meditation. And gradually, you know, this is concentration practice, you're able to maintain that easeful and pleasurable abiding during the course of your day. So our objective is, you know, this body that was all fraught with emotional pain and physical pain and the pain of aging, we're bringing a quality of ease to it. So this body that was tight and tense and dissonance, now it's filled with ease and pleasure. As the Buddha says, let me see if I can find this here, in his description of the first jhana. You only need the first jhana. Says, there is nothing quite withdrawn from sensuality, withdrawn from unskillful mental qualities. He or she remains in the first jhana, rapture, which is ease, rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal, accompanied by directed thought and evaluation. He or she permeates and pervades, suffuses and fills this very body with the rapture and pleasure born of withdrawal. So that's our objective, to permeate and pervade, suffuse and fill this very body with a rapture, that's PT, ease, and pleasure, sukha, born from withdrawal. So as the body takes on this pleasurable abiding, the mind becomes content. The mind becomes content. The mind is content. The mind is content to be right where it is. It's like, hey, this feels good. I don't need to be anywhere else. The way the Buddha describes it in that same passage that I just, and it'll be in the notes, the Buddha says, and as he remains this heedful and ardent and resolute, any memories and resolves related to the household life are abandoned. And with their abandoning, his mind gathers and settles inwardly, grows unified and centered. This is how a monk develops mindfulness immersed in the body. So any memories and resolves related to the household life are abandoned, which means, you know, really that, you know, all the stuff that you're not content with, all you're wanting, all the things that you want and all the things that you don't want, all your experience of the present moment that was previously unpleasant to you and all the things that you wanted in the present moment, you let go of all of that. You're content. You know, you're content to be where you are. You know, our experience is pleasurable and we're content. We're content to be in the body and in this present moment. We don't need to be anywhere else or have anything else that we don't have. When there's this quality of contentedness, the mind stills. The mind stills. The mind isn't engaged, as I've just said, in wanting and not wanting. Typically, the mind is caught in wanting and not wanting. The mind is caught in wanting. I want my sense experience to be different. I want a different sense experience. Or I want certain things, or I want notoriety. The mind typically is caught in wanting. where the mind is caught in not wanting. I don't want what I have in this moment in terms of my sense experience, or I want certain things or certain possessions or certain amounts of money or prestige or acclaim. This is how the mind typically is. It's caught in wanting and not wanting. This is known as dukkha, dukkha, suffering. All suffering is rooted in wanting and not wanting, aversion and desire. The mind is typically in this state of wanting or not wanting, the state of dukkha, which is a state of agitation. Tanisaro Bhikkhu translates it as stress. It's a state of pain. It's a painful state. It's a painful state. It's a state that we're trying to get out of when we go into those hindrances. You know, and we've been in this state of dukkha for a long time, you know, and the longer we're in it, the more painful it becomes. As the Buddha says, you know, we've been wandering, transmigrating on in this life in pain over being joined with what we find displeasing and not being joined with what we find pleasing. You know, this is our state, our state of dukkha, wanting and not wanting. In pain over being joined with what we find displeasing and not being joined with what we find pleasing. When we're in this state of dukkha, we're cut off from the heart. So when we have this pleasurable abiding in the meditation, when we come into this state of the first jhana, where we begin to experience these jhana qualities of ease, rapture, piti, and pleasure, sukha, and the body is filled with sukha, with pleasure, there's contentedness in the mind. There is an abatement of wanting, an abatement or a lessening of wanting, and an abatement of not wanting. We let go of wanting what we don't have and not wanting what we have, including our own experience in the present moment. When the body fills with ease and pleasure, it becomes content. It let go of wanting what it doesn't have and not wanting what it has, and the mind becomes content, and it stills, comes into a place of stillness, of tranquility, silence. This quality of tranquility is the sixth factor for awakening. It's the sixth factor for awakening. And the seventh and culminating factor is equanimity. This quality of tranquility is essential, essential for awakening. This is how we develop this quality. So when there's tranquility, the tranquility that comes when the mind is content, because the body is in a state of ease and pleasure, when there's tranquility, the mark of tranquility is a diminishment of thinking, right? We're not thinking about what we want that we don't have and what we have that we don't want. There's a diminishment of thinking. We're less in the head. We're more in the body, and we're closer to the heart. We're closer to the heart. When we're more in the body and closer to the heart, then we're in a position to meet difficulty. Then we're in a position to meet suffering and to begin to bring a discerning mind to our dukkha. We can meet our experience of suffering with wisdom and with compassion. You know, when we have tranquility and we're out of the head and out of thinking, we're more in the body and we're closer to the heart, then we're in position to discern what it is that we have to do in this life to be happy. What is an expression of love for ourselves and for others? And we're in position to take action. We're in position to take action that we discern is in our best interests. In my book, I call this the most favorable state. The most favorable state. The state in which we're in a pleasurable abiding. There's contentedness and tranquility. We're in position, a position of strength in which to take skillful action. The more we take skillful action that's imbued with loving kindness and compassion, the more we're able to be in the body, the more we are with the heart. So the path is a path to the heart. Path of concentration is a path to the heart. So, you know, we talk a lot about, and the Buddha talked a lot about respect for concentration. respect for concentration. You know, we want to jump over concentration, or we want to jump over the steps. So, you know, we have to have respect for concentration, because it's concentration that leads us to wisdom, the wisdom that will free us from our suffering, from dukkha. We learn to have respect for concentration because our efforts, as I just spoke about briefly, our efforts to develop concentration really comprise our goodness. And we learn to have respect for concentration because in concentration, we begin to know happiness. We begin to know the happiness of tranquility. The happiness of the mind that's at peace. So in our practice, we're developing tranquility in the mind that's at peace. The mind that's at peace in and of itself. In and of itself, this mind that's at peace is a great blessing. And when the mind is at peace, there is a happiness that we know. The happiness of peace, the Buddha said, the mind at peace is the greatest happiness. Which is why he said, train for peace. Train for peace. When the mind is at peace, our attention is in the body and close to the heart. Our awareness converges at the heart when there's concentration and contentedness, when we're content to be in our experience of the body, to be in this present moment. Our awareness converges right at the heart. Usually our awareness, our consciousness is all over the place. Oh, the pain in the knee, oh, that anxiety. You don't even realize. Your consciousness is all over the place, all over the place. When there's tranquility and the mind comes into this place of stillness, your awareness more and more begins to converge right at the heart, the place of happiness. This practice is a practice of knowing happiness of the heart.